Speakeasy.
Words.
Lingo.
Speakeasy.
Language.
Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth.
Nice to be with you and welcome, Daniel Midgley.
Gosh, what a great place this is.
Isn't it lovely?
First time here. It's wonderful.
Impressive, isn't it?
We're coming live from Bulabardip. The name reflects the importance of Noongar land and language to the museum. Dual language use and dual signage is, I guess, a way of honouring Aboriginal culture. But does it preserve Aboriginal languages? You know, what are the benefits? Daniel Midgley might be able to cast his mind across that and let us know. What do you think?
I'm going to try. I mean, our Australian languages are a wonderful part of everyone's heritage, especially for the people who are traditionally associated with these languages. We are in the WA Museum Bulabardip, and do you have a mnemonic for remembering this? You know, whenever I try to learn a language, I always try to make up these weird mnemonics to help me remember. And I'm trying to remember the bard part, like somebody who tells a story. I'm working on the Bula part. But you know what? Whenever I talk about the museum, I'm not even going to say it's the museum. I'm going to say, hey, we're going on to Bulabardip.
Yeah, I think that's the way it will work. I hope that's the way it heads.
I hope so.
I'm still coming to terms with it, so I call it the museum every now and then, but I will try and say Bulabardip as much as I can.
You know, making an effort to remember and use Aboriginal names is something that us Wadjalas can do. And so I am going to test you. Can you remember?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, here we go. Rottnest Island.
Wadjabup.
Nice. Yeah. Very good. Have you ever heard the Noongar name of the Swan River?
Dibble-Yurigan.
Hey, you got it. Oh, my gosh. Nadia, you're on fire.
Hit me, Daniel.
Dibble-Yurigan. All right. Well, do you know Lake Monger? You might not have heard this one. I never had. It's Gallup. Which is easy to remember.
Really?
Right? How am I going to get there? I'm going to get there on a horse. I'm going to gallop.
Yeah, or think of Jeff Gallop.
Hey, that's good,
former
too.
Former premier.
So, you know, this is something that we can do. And very often, many of us who go to a certain place, you know, we go abroad and we say, yeah, you know, whenever I go to another country, I like to learn a few words of the language, right? Well, you are on Noongar Budja, right? You are on Wadjup Noongar country. And so this is something that we can all do. It promotes awareness of Aboriginal culture and honours the connection and the contribution of Aboriginal people to the land.
The Rotto one, I think, is certainly catching on. I do come across quite a few people now who will refer to Rotto as Wadjimup.
Yep.
And I won't even explain it. Well, until I'll explain it afterward. If they go, what? To what? You know, a Rottnest Island. Yeah. Wadjimup. Just keep on promoting it. Just keep it going.
Very good. Daniel Midgley is with us. 1-300-222-720 if you want to ask him a question. You can text as well. 0437 922 720. It's 9 to 7. Let me just say quietly behind you, Daniel, there are listeners that are starting to make their way in this morning.
And, hey! Hello!
Just getting in. You might have a question for Daniel Midgley yourself, in which case we can perhaps get a microphone to you. Yeah, Kate's here with a microphone.
She'll come to you. Just pop your hand up, just like being back at school.
I'll do my best.
Okay, Daniel, this is from JB. He says, tsunami sounds like a Japanese word, yet it's the only word used around the world to describe the event. Why is this so?
Okay, how do we get the word? We used to call it in tidal waves. It turns out a tsunami isn't quite the same thing as a tidal wave. So we borrowed the word from Japanese, started appearing in books around 1897, but tidal wave started decreasing in popularity and tsunami really took hold in about the 1960s. The really cool thing for me is that nami is breaking free and forming its own sort of combining form. So sometimes if you have parents of very young children, they'll talk about a really bad diaper is a poonami, right? I've heard this. I've used this one myself.
Very good.
And I've also seen in documents from like 2009, at least, that there was a flu-nami. Has anybody, now that I got you here, has anybody heard any other nami combining forms? I only found two, but if you know another one, put your hand up. Or you can make up one now.
Flu-nami, poonami.
Board-nami.
What do you mean, board nami?
Well, you know, it's early in the morning. We're trying to get people to think. They just want to sleep nami.
Is it a museum? Nami. These are exhibits.
Quiet nami. Stop asking me question nami.
You're on the roll, nami.
7 to 7. Daniel, have you noticed, this is from Jan, I think we know Jan.
We know Jan. Hi, Jan.
Have you noticed the trend to use the word where rather than when or in which.
So you could say the situation when this happens, the situation where this happens, or the situation in which this happens. These are all, they're called relative pronouns, so it's no wonder that we kind of mix them up a little bit. I did a little bit of searching in a gigantic database of words. In which seems a little bit formal, so that's better in formal writing. Situation in which was enormously popular in the 1800s. Now, situation where and situation in which are neck and neck. You should probably stay away from situation when, because that's least popular in writing.
Okay. Right. Here's one from Pete in Hilton.
Thanks, Jane.
Daniel, can we discover the origin of the phrase hanky-panky, please?
Oh, okay.
Pete.
Hey, it's early about.
Bit early for that, Pete.
Well, my motto's always been, when it's right, it's right. there are a lot of words with the pattern HP. These words that kind of rhyme with each other, like, let's see, hocus-pocus.
Oh, yeah.
Got any more? Higgledy-piggledy. Hanky-panky.
People say holus-bolus, and I know that's a B, but...
Same deal. Hodge-podge. Yeah. These were all kind of invented. These go way back to the 1500s. In fact, the hocus-pocus is super old. That might have come from, jugglers and performers borrowing language from the mass. Hoc est corpus. This is my body. And it turned into hocus-pocus. We don't know where hanky-panky comes from, even though it follows that pattern. It could be a Romani expression, hakni-panky, great trick, but I'm not sure I believe that.
I've always just thought hanky was short for handkerchief. It never quite worked out why.
A conjurer could use a hanky in a trick, and that's another possibility.
But how did it come to mean, lovemaking?
Well, somebody is tricking you, and so there's some kind of funny business.
I understand. Don't start anymore. I absolutely get that.
I've got another Nami for you. Someone's just texted in Spunami.
Ah, very good.
I reckon that's come from the mother of a child.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Spunami's good. Okay.
Paul wants to know.
Yes.
Where does the word bespoke come from?
Oh, this one's really old. So we actually have an old English word, besprechen. The B probably means to cause. Like when you belabor somebody about the head and shoulders, you cause them to be labored. So that's causing. And the spoke is to speak for. So when you speak for that donut, you call it, you arrange it, it's yours, you arrange it to happen. So when something is bespoke, you caused it to be arranged. There you go.
Okay.
That's very good.
Now here's an interesting one from Deb. Mm. If the family name is Peach, would you write the Peaches, so C-H-S, H-S, the Peaches, C-H apostrophe S, or the Peaches, C-H-E-S?
Okay. Pluralizing surnames is kind of like pluralizing anything else, except for one thing. If there's a Y, don't make it I-E-S, so the Murphys are still the Murphys with a Y. Okay, now do you add an apostrophe or not? If you're just talking about, I'm going to see the peaches, just pluralize it like it's the fruit, E-S on the end, no problem there. However, if you're meaning that you're going to the peaches house, now things get a little bit different. Now it's possessive, and you should treat it like any other possessive. You should add an apostrophe after the S, because there's more than one peach. I think there's more than one. Is there more than one peach?
There'd be a family of peaches.
You have a family of
there's
peaches.
There's a couple of them.
So pluralize it, make it peach, E-S, apostrophe.
See, this is why I like no apostrophe November.
Yeah.
Just
which
don't
we're
do
still
it.
In. We've only got a few days to go. Today's the 26th of November.
So don't use the apostrophe.
I haven't been doing very much with it. You know, people have been so tense lately for some reason. I just thought maybe I would just drop it this year and not get on people's nerves.
Don't go near Gillian O'Shaughnessy too, because she likes apostrophes.
Go ahead and use it for your name. That's fine.
This is from a teacher, but I don't know the teacher's name. She said, why is very fun so jarring?
Okay, it doesn't jar me, but if it jars you, maybe it's because you feel like fun is a noun. We had fun,
yes,
which is fine. But some people feel like you shouldn't use fun as an adjective, and therefore you're describing it as very fun. Now, I don't know why fun shouldn't be an adjective. We are dealing with English here, where we happily transplant words from category to category. You can read a book, or you can book a flight, and it isn't any sort of problem. So this is one of mine that I'm calling not a problem.
Okay.
A couple of minutes away from 7 o'clock, Daniel Midgley with us on Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth, coming to you live from Boulabardip.
Anyone a question here? We've only got a couple of minutes to go. I know it's a bit nerve-wracking. If this was an evening and we'd given you a couple of shots of vodka or something, you'd be into it, right?
But
it's a bit tough to come up with smart questions at this time of the day.
No, they're just getting warming up. They're having their tea and coffee.
They're going to hit me afterwards.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
I'll drop a bit of Kahlua in there. I mean, I don't mean to keep talking about alcohol. It's not the key.
Amanda.
When it's right, it's right.
We would have better questions, I promise you.
Can I squeeze one more quick one in from Amanda?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When did normalcy start to replace normality?
Interestingly, it hasn't replaced it yet. I did a quick database search, and normality is way more popular than normalcy. Might have been helped along by the 1920 U.S. presidential campaign of Warren Harding. His slogan was, "Return to normalcy." But as we've mentioned before, normalcy is used about words dealing with real life. And normality, the word, is used near words about data and statistics. So there's
Thank
your guide.
You. Mm. Thank you. You're going to hang around for a bit?
I'm going to hang around for a bit and say hi.
Go look for the poo drawers. The fossilized poo.
Will you I find a poonami? Is that
The poonami.
I might find one.
Again, the language is fantastic. When she says poo drawers, there's going to be a whole lot of people that are thinking that means something very different to what you're describing.
Drawers has more than one meaning.
Yeah. They're in trays, little drawers that you can pull out. They've been hidden, so you've got to go look for them.
It's a painful nickname I had in elementary school.
Poo.
Poo drawers.
Poudreaux's Midgley.
Thanks for the memories.
No troubles. Ladies and gentlemen, because you're here and we're live, you can clap your hands together for Daniel Midgley.
Thank you.
Oh, look at him. He's bowing. He loves the crowd, doesn't he?
Thank
he's
you.
Very good in front of a crowd.
The linguist and host of Because Language joins us every Thursday morning.